Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today is a very special episode. I have Kay Wilson Bolton on the line, and she is the Volunteer Director of Spirit of Santa Paula. Kay, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Adam. It's always so good to talk to you.
Oh my gosh. So good to have you here. I've been looking forward to this. We're definitely going to talk about books. We're going to talk about podcasting. We'll talk about Spirit of Santa Paula. We'll talk about real estate. We got a lot to cover here today, but we will start this episode the way that we start them all with our Mission Matters Minute. So, okay, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Okay, what mission matters to you?
For Spirit of Santa Paula, and my personal mission is to help people live better lives through better food, education, housing, shelter, basic needs. The poverty pool in our country is getting larger, wider, deeper, and we want to do what we can in our community to make life easier for people of all ages.
It's a great mission and great to have you on to, so that we can help you spread that mission and spread that message and that word. And well, so maybe just to get us kicked off, I don't want to assume maybe that some of our listeners caught some of our previous work. So maybe let's just start with, you know, how did the Spirit of Santa Paula come about?
In 2002, there were actually six people, three couples, who met in the home of one of our friends, and we had just come off a very contentious land use issue in our community of Santa Paula, and it sort of settled on the battle between the haves and the have-nots and the issue of housing and how we were going to use the land. And so there was a dividing line that was very clear who was on one side and the other. And we wanted to do something to help heal our community. So we started a group. We called it Spirit of Santa Paula, Spirit standing for Santa Paulans Investing in Relationships of Integrity and Truth. And so we kind of fooled around with our purpose for 6 years. And on Christmas Eve in 2008, we discovered that a homeless man had died in one of our churches. And up to that point, we really didn't know that we had homeless people in our community. And so I'm a chaplain with Ventura County Fire Department, and I was on that call. And I was shocked to find out that somebody could be so sick they could die in a church. And wow. So we decided to do something about that. And that kind of event launched us into today's calling to prevent and end homelessness in our community.
We'll go further into Spirit of Santa Paula. I do want to know more, but I want to stick kind of in the beginning for a moment longer, because I know that, you know, many individuals, you know, they want to do well, they want to, you know, do right by their community, and they want to give back. But there's a difference, I feel, I'm not judging, but you were able to go from like concept, idea, and then actually do something. Like, if there was, what's that thing that helps you take an idea, in the case philanthropic, or I mean business in general, right? This is the same, some of the same ingredients, but specifically for this conversation, like philanthropic, like what gets you from like that idea to like, okay, we're doing something?
Two things. One is passion. If your passion button is pushed, you become relentless and you become very focused, and you don't spend a lot of time with people who don't share the passion. And I believe that God had a purpose in all of this, because he has fashioned our mission statement. He has helped us focus and align with like-minded people. So we found that there weren't a lot of people who shared our vision. And so we just moved away from them, and we asked them to just let us do our thing and kind of leave us alone. There was a lot of criticism initially. In fact, I had to find a new circle of friends, because they felt that by feeding one homeless person, you would end up feeding a dozen and maybe thousands. We're a community of about 30,000 people. And so feeding thousands was a ridiculous assumption, but people have fear of things they don't know about and don't understand. And they tend to not trust people who want to understand that. And so we moved towards a circle of people who shared our passion and our vision, and we put them to work. They rolled up their sleeves, came alongside us with financial support. And there was a lot of moral support that went into the work, because initially it was very difficult to navigate in our community.
Yeah, nothing's easy, whether it's a philanthropic, you know, effort, whether it's starting a new organization, a business, like nothing's easy. And to me, the meaningful things like you mentioned, they're going to have, you know, exactly what you said, passion. God has to be involved, right? Like for anything to happen. But I think that the chemistry and like the idea that a team comes together with a vision to execute that, like that's a easier said than done, right? Like, how do you manage that? I know it's not one thing, by the way. I don't want to oversimplify it, but like, what are some of the things that allow you to manage and to lead in a direction?
There are several things. One is I'm in a business that real estate, I've been a broker for 45 years. And that business alone allows me the flexibility of time. I don't have to be in one location for 8 hours a day. I can slip in and out of the real estate work. And that has allowed me to do this. If I had to be in an office 8 hours a day, it wouldn't have been possible. So that is one thing. The chosen career made this career possible. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we were early adapters to the internet. Mm-hmm. I still have the first email that I sent to 12 people in the early 2009, asking them to fix a meal for their family and then a dish for us and deliver it on Wednesday to this little church on South Mill Street so we could serve it to the homeless people who had discovered they could trust us and that we had their best interest in mind. So use of the internet has been very helpful. And we were under the radar for a long time and we're humble people and we chose to stay there because we knew God had us covered and we didn't need to brag about what we were doing. In fact, we kind of, the less people knew, the better. Because we didn't need the criticism or we didn't want people interfering with just the basics of providing a hot meal.
What an amazing story. I don't know how many times we've spoken, quite a few at this point since we've known each other, and I haven't heard that one. That's amazing. So it started with an email and provide a meal, right? Like it was that simple in the beginning.
Yeah, fix one, share one was kind of our
answer. Fix one, share one. I bring that up because sometimes I feel, myself included, I'll say some of us entrepreneurs or individuals that want to get things done, like sometimes we complicate it, but sometimes a little action and narrowing it down to like what resources we have today and what we can do now can actually lead into something big, right?
That happened.
That happened here too. I mean, briefly, our story here, we podcasting when we started, I didn't even buy a mic. I used my phone and headphones. My very first interview, since you're talking about, and we put up the show in like, I don't know, 10 minutes. It was an experiment. And I think it was going to lead to, you know, what we do now? No, but we just started, right? So, Kay, I want to focus in a little bit on the book today. And I do also want to talk a little bit about your real estate practice and what you do there as well. But the real rate of return is the one that I want to talk about today. And really, in this chapter and in this work, you introduce this concept of encouraging people to maybe rethink about their relationship with their idea around rate of return. I love the angle. In a previous career, I was a financial advisor, and I used to tell people, like, you know, you can't eat rate of return. Like, what does that number actually mean? But I never took it like further. Like that was just to me, my level of thought at that time, but you took it further. Can you tell us a little bit more about your concept?
If you are a millionaire, it means you have $1 million in the bank. If you have $1,010,000 in the bank, you're still a millionaire. But if you take that $10,000 and you pay a family's rent, $2,000 a month for 5 months, and you're down to $1 million, you're still a millionaire. And you can go to sleep at night knowing that a family has had their rent paid for 5 months, which allows them then to maybe go buy a computer, fix a car, tithe to their church, do a lot of things, put a full stack of groceries in the refrigerator in the cupboard. And that rate of return should make everyone feel good. And when you go to sleep at night, you can think about that family. And so I just think our rate of return has to move away from what's in it for me to a rate of return that benefits others. I'm Christian and, you know, I love people who aren't. And many of the principles of being a good citizen are found in every religion. And it's looking out for others. Are we our brother's keeper? I think we are. There have been times when people have taken care of me. Anything I do is a payback. I know people talk about paying it forward, and that's kind of so you can get something out of it. But for me, it's paying back all the wonderful people who had the idea that I was part of the family where they felt they could expend some money and increase their own rate of return. So our country and our world would be so much softer and better if people were willing to consider rate of return differently.
And I think that, like, a lot of times the media, like when something big happens, right? This, billionaire gives away something or like gives back or something like that. Like that gets all the attention. Recent one, I think, was Patagonia founder, right? Gave away his company. Yeah. Amazing thing that individuals do. But to me, like and what your chapter got me to think is I'm like, if we all did that collectively, like how we could possibly like move the needle on society, right? Like civilization in terms of how others live and how they enjoy the quality of life. Cause we didn't, like, none of us built all this ourselves, period. Like the camera we're looking at and talking to right now, the microphones, all that, like we're benefiting from, the labor of many that have gone before us, right?
Right. And the argument though often goes to like the discussion right now about forgiving the education debt. People are really kind of going crazy over that one, saying you borrowed it, you pay it back. Mm-hmm. Well, what if you can't? What if the job you decide to take is a teacher? A teacher's salary in our country is ridiculously low. And so they struggle, I'm sure. But if on my rate of return, I can say I gave 20% of my income this year because my house is paid, my car is paid for, I live simply and modestly. My 20% goes to make a teacher's life better, what a rate of return that is. And I'm not talking about handouts, people who are lazy. I'm talking about making people's life better who want to participate in that process. So we have to be wise about how we do that. It's not handing out $100 bills to people who walk by. Judicial and discreet in many ways on who you help and how.
And the strange thing about this that I've found just in my life, and I'm sure many others have, is that many times the more you give, the more you get back. Like it's just that law of reciprocation. It doesn't have to be financial, but whatever you get back, it just tends to be like a lot more than the money you gave.
It is. And it's hard to measure. I mean, that's when the real rate of return shows up.
I completely agree with it. And it's for those that have experienced it or are experiencing it, like they get it. For those that maybe haven't, not judging, I mean, everybody's on their own path, right? Their own walk. But I just love what you wrote. I love the concept and I love like how it was positioned in the book. And I'm like, okay, this makes sense. And it built on something that I thought about for a long time, but not to the level that you had. I was just thinking very basic on the number. I didn't really think about like looking under the hood of that number as well. And then how to increase it through other things that maybe not as easy to measure, as you mentioned. So, Kay, I want to jump around a little bit here. You mentioned, real estate, and I want to talk about your business as well. I understand that you mentioned you've been a broker now, 40 years or so. Can you tell us a little bit more about your practice?
I had the advantage of starting in a small town. I didn't know anything, so I had no bad habits. And so when we moved to Santa Paula in 1976, I realized kind of early that this kind of business was built on relationships. So I came to town not knowing anybody. So I figured out pretty quickly that I needed to get to know people. So I became sort of a junkie on community service. Yeah. My heart was sincere and my heart was in it, but I could see that it was necessary if I was going to pay my bills. So I did that and have been very engaged in my community. Mm. And so I started early realizing that how important it was to be equipped for any job that we do. And I started knowing nothing and there was really nobody to teach me anything. So we bought a small company with two people in it. And it was kind of a sleepy little town back in the day. And there were five men kind of who ran the real estate enterprise in Santa Paula. And they used to meet once a week. There was a woman who tried to join the group and they wouldn't let her. So that's a whole nother story. But in that day, it was not expected that you knew much. So I realized that I had to get myself trained. So I started engaging partners, escrow people, title people, and helping me do net sheets and just learning that you have to grow yourself so that you become proficient. And God has blessed me a lot. I enjoy a really nice real estate practice. It's built on referrals. I don't have to knock on doors anymore. I know the young ones do these days, and I'm so glad I don't have to do that. The business is changed so much, and you have to be a really good adapter if you're going to survive almost any business these days because of the technology.
And so I think it's really interesting, and I didn't know this about you either, is that you started really in community service. Many enter the field of real estate, and as you use the word, you know, community service junkie, many enter the field and they're looking at other ways to get out there. But you even, like, in your DNA, I mean, I don't know, I'm sure you've thought of this at some point, like, you even started with giving back. Like, that was just intuitive for you, right?
Well, it's because so many people have been good to me. I remember when we moved from New Hampshire to this little town, Yucaipa, California, we just weren't oriented to California life. And there was two people who lived in our neighborhood who picked me. I was 8 years old, took me to church, took me to see movies. The Audubon Society had movies, and McDonald's hamburgers started in San Bernardino, California. And we had 19-cent hamburgers. And it was just all new to me because we'd come off a farm in New Hampshire. And I just thought of those people so many times, how many times they picked me up, brought me home, got me into opportunities. And I've really felt compelled to share my ability to do that with others. We have 16 kids at our homeless shelter right now. And there's a lot of little girls. And when I walk in the door, it's like, Kay's here. Everything is okay because Kay's there. And I am not bragging about that, but that's the role that God has allowed me to play in their lives, bringing stability, confidence, security, just the comfort that kids need today. I mean, their families are in homeless shelters. You can only imagine what brought them to that point. Yeah. But to be able to give them what they, all of us need and want, is just a thrill.
Let's go further on this. So just kind of the technical side of things. Tell us a little bit more about the Spirit of Santa Paula.
We have 15 employees. We have a budget of about $1.5 million. We just received a grant from the state of California, thanks to Assemblymember Steve Bennett and Senator Monique Limon, to add on to our shelter. We're in construction right now, and it's very challenging to keep our programs going. We're a partner with CalRecycle, the state of California, where there are now mandated programs for rescuing food in order to keep it out of the landfill that's causing greenhouse gases to exacerbate the climate change. I know that's an argument waiting to happen, but that's what the state says. So they gave us a nice chunk of money. We bought 2 refrigerated trucks, and we collected 80,000 pounds of food in August from 15 grocery stores, and it's all edible. I'm a food manager. I have 11 people with their food safety certificates. Mm-hmm. We have 2 huge food pantries a week where we're serving about 3,000 people a month, and it varies depending upon the weather. We have a one-stop operation that's in cooperation with the County of Ventura Public Health and Continuum of Care, where Fridays our street homeless people can come for food, see a doctor, the mobile clinic is there, they can get showers and have their laundry done. We have a variety of programs. We're trying to be everything we can be to people who are homeless. The goal is shelter, but you know, in reality, some people just don't want shelter. They have bad personal habits, either drug or alcohol abuse, and they want to be free to be able to do that out in the riverbeds, which all of us hate. But, you know, I want to provide them whatever they need to keep them healthy as we can. Last year in Ventura, there was one person that utilized the emergency room 182 times. Terrible drain on taxpayer dollars. We've provided 12 commercial fire extinguishers to our riverbed camps, and we know of 3 saves so far where there was a fire that started and they had the fire extinguisher to put it out. Major benefit to taxpayers. So our service isn't just to benefit people who want to live like the Lone Ranger out in the riverbed. It's also to help taxpayers expend less money in places where they don't have to.
And so it's just amazing to hear where you're at now. and the amount of good you've been able to, with your team and organization, the support of many individuals I know to accomplish, and like how many people you've been able to help. To think, you know, it goes back and started with that, not necessarily, but with that email, right? Mm-hmm. The first campaign, if you will, or one of the first campaigns. So now, I mean, what's next? Like, what's on the agenda? Like, where does this go from here?
We have two things. One is a program called Launch. In our, the addition to our building includes a nice classroom and training center. And what we want to do is partner with either Oxnard College or Channel Islands University to bring in people to help with programs, showing people how to live better, managing money, how do you improve a credit score? Such basic things as how do you keep your kids in school? How do you help with discipline problems? We have 48 people at the shelter right now, and 16 of them are children. We had one child whose mother forgot to register her for school. Mm-hmm. And so we said to the girl, what are you doing here today at school? Oh, my mom forgot to register me. I mean, that's hard to imagine, but not everyone has had the advantage of good parenting. Mm-hmm. And so Launch is our next phase. And we're hoping that we can, you know, fill those classes with people who really want to do better and be better. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's really worrying me is while we have a shelter for people sort of in transition, it's becoming not transition, but permanent. There is no place for these people to move to. Mm-hmm. We have emergency housing vouchers available, but if they can't find a landlord who will rent to them because of their own background, low credit score, previous eviction, yeah, maybe some troubled youth problems that stay with them, then where are they going to go? I have several people at the shelter have been there for 3 years. I can't create a homeless person and kick them out because there's no place to go. So our two phases, work with some builders to identify, in my role as a realtor, identify housing opportunities so that we have a place to put our people when they are launched into the next phase of being able to live ably and capably away from Harvard Shelter.
I'm curious. So obviously a lot going on, and this is from my standpoint. So I interview a lot of individuals, whether it's business, philanthropic or otherwise, and I'm always curious on their take on really like creating content and why it's important to get their message out there. Because I know you mentioned sometimes you want to stay under the radar and it's important to do that. I agree with that 100%, especially, you know, what's when you're called to get a message out there further. But what is it meant to you to start creating content and to start getting the word out just a little bit more on the story and crafting that? Like what has that meant in your role?
A lot. Because what we've tried to do, and I'm bolder now using Facebook, Instagram, we have a podcast of our own coming up. Tomorrow's our first filming called Bruised Reads.
Oh, you better believe I was bringing that up, Kay. I'm so thrilled about this podcast, everybody. Go ahead, please.
All 15 of my staff have what we call lived experience.
Yeah.
And it's very important to have people who know what that means, because they have backgrounds where, let me give you an example. One of my staff members had parents who were drug dealers. Mm-hmm. One of my staff members has a mother who's currently homeless. They've all had substance abuse of some kind in their past. So that lived experience allows them to bring something very special to their role because they have a different filter. They have a different lens that they see the person in front of them through, so they can understand, empathize, sympathize, and be more compassionate as we deliver services. Exciting to watch them grow through all of this. And I'm excited to see them take on very specific roles in the organization. I mean, I'm 75 now, and I feel like I have a lot of years left, but you don't know. And I certainly don't want anything to collapse because I disappear from the scene, you know, suddenly, particularly. We're in succession planning and we've got wonderful people filling big shoes.
It's great. Can't hold myself back anymore on this podcast. I'm so excited for it. What was the inspiration behind launching this? Because I've been thrilled. I cannot wait to have it on our website and to distribute it and to get it all out there. Because for me, I mean, I know where your heart's at. I know you're humble and you know, you're okay. I understand that, but I'll say it. You do great work. And these stories that you have, my mother was in social work almost 40 years. And so she worked with at-risk teens and at-risk youth. And so she worked with some of the most, you know, hard cases, I'd say, in terms of like to hear the stories and some of the lives, like in my life that I've ever experienced and been a part of witnessing. But that being said, it's not always easy. But to now create this podcast and to get, you know, and to distribute it and to get these stories heard, like, what's your concept for the show?
It is to tell the story of somebody who's been broken by life. People who don't know what that means have lived a sheltered life. They've had great parents, stable lifestyles, plenty of money. They never worried about if the rent was going to be paid or if the lights were on. And so the people that we love and serve have come from broken places. And our job is to find their story and make it real so that people will say, gee, that could have been me. Or, yes, I have a child like that. They're not in my home. They're not near me, but I have a child like that. I wonder where they are, a brother or sister. And you know what I'm finding, Adam, is that more and more people are saying, yes, there's somebody in my family with that challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think we're becoming kinder. I think those who aren't kind just are ignorant and don't know. And God bless them for not having the challenge. But I'm grateful that I know people with these kind of challenges because they need people to put an arm around them. And their story has to become real. Maria's our first one. She's tomorrow. She cannot tell her story without so much shame on her face, and tears immediately come when she talks about how she treated her children. I usually start an interview with her. We've done it two or three times. Tomorrow's the big deal. And she'll say, to the one thing that started the decline was no discipline. She was moved to live with her grandmother, I think, when she was five. And so her brothers and sisters. And grandma was busy, tired, raised her own kids, and now she's got her grandkids, and there was no discipline. Mm-hmm. So they hit the streets, stayed in the streets. The streets found them. They were lured to it. They were attracted to everything in it. Coming home late, no homework, not brushing their teeth. That's the decline. And so Maria will tell the story of what that meant to her. She was pregnant at 15, became a mother, drug addict. What does she do with this baby? Grandma's got her. I mean, it's just a crushing story multiplied by millions. So I want people to know Maria. I also want them to know it doesn't have to stay like that. Mm-hmm. Maria is committed to sobriety. She's been clean 2 years. A drug addict, that's like forever.
Yeah.
For 2 years, but every day for her is, I'm not going to say struggle, but it's a challenge because if she gets annoyed by somebody, there's a little bit of a trigger there that I'm really mad right now. And if I go use, then I don't feel so. But then that starts the tumble all over again. Mm-hmm. So Maria's story is going to be first. We wanted Jesse to be second, but Jesse's out in the streets. We wanted Adam to be third, and he died. So Adam's the most handsome guy and family here in Santa Paula. Loved got out of jail. He said, okay, I promise I'll come to Harvard. I said, don't go to the streets first, Adam. You won't make it. He did. And he did.
Heartbreaking. How brave of these individuals to share their stories, right? For the benefit of others. They don't have to do this. Like, this is a commitment for them trying to help others as well. And when you think about rate of return, another way of them, of me thinking about this is that a rate of like their experience, like them to give back, like it's such a selfless act.
It is. And there's, it's hard for them to tell because there's so much shame, but I tell them it's a new day. Stand up. Put your shoulders back. You're here now. That was then. This is now. And so they need that constant encouragement because the world is tough on people who aren't quite making it. Really tough.
Well, Kay, I have to tell you, it has been great having you back on the show and reconnecting. And of course, I cannot wait for this show to go live. And I want all our, whether it be on our website, all by the time this is out, by the way, for everybody watching, I should say the edited version, the podcast will be live. We'll put links in the show notes so you can just click on the links and head right on over and hit that subscribe button. So I definitely want everyone to check this out. And of course, we'll have links to Kay's recently released book that she released with us as well in the show notes. And that being said, to everybody, if this is your first time engaging with a Mission Matters episode or listening to anything on the platform, We're all about bringing on entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share their mission, the reason behind their mission. Like, why do they do what they do? Like, why is it important? Like, how are they trying to give back to the world? If that's the type of content that you think is interesting or fun or exciting, or you can learn from it, hit that subscribe button, because we have many more mission-based individuals coming up on the line and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Kay, again, I know you are busy. Thank you so much for making time for us and your friends at Mission Matters. We're thrilled to have you on board. So thank you.
Thank you, Adam. Bye for now.